The holidays mean more travel, more shopping, more time online, and more personal info in more places that could expose you more to identity theft. But LifeLock monitors millions of data points per second. If your identity is stolen, our U.S.-based restoration specialists will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Don't face drained accounts, fraudulent loans, or financial losses alone. Get more holiday fun and less holiday worry with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/podcast. Terms apply.
Everybody out there listening, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, doesn't matter. Number one, God, we love you. Number two, leave us a 5-star review. Please keep sharing the show. So it helps out. And sharing is caring.
We're on a rooftop, and we're glad you're here with us today, live from the On3 Elite Series Summit. Top college football players in the country are here. I'm David Cohn. This is Blaine Crane. Before we introduce our guest quickly, what's your best guess on where your brother is right this second?
He's probably somewhere in Italy.
He's in Italy.
Italy annoying the hell out of somebody.
He went to London.
Yep.
I know he's going to London and then to France. Now you think he's in Italy.
You never know with this guy. You really don't know. The spy formation is slowly starting to come together. There's some depth to this story. And the breadcrumbs are starting to add up. And next thing you know, we're going to have a full loaf at the bakery.
Well, that's his brother saying that. So, Jake, you can get mad at him. But we're going to hold down the fort today while our boy Jake Crane is in Europe, probably wearing a back-to-back World War Champ shirt. But like I said, On3, industry leader when it comes to college football. We're so honored to be here today. And we had to start off this show with our buddy Andy Staples. Andy, thanks
one
so much for joining us.
What's up? No, so, do you think people in France are when they see the back-to-back World War Champs t-shirt, do they go, thank you?
No.
You think they don't appreciate the...
Jake said before he they left, they better tell me thank you.
Yeah. Why do we have to pay for anything over there? To be honest, shouldn't everything be free?
Every croissant.
Yeah, absolutely.
Free crepes for life, at least.
Exactly.
Andy, tell us a little bit about what's going on here today.
So basically, you've got dozens of the best rising high school seniors in the country. So this is the class of 2025, the cream of the crop. You know, you got the number one QB, Bryce Underwood. You've got number one offensive lineman, number one running back, number one safety, number one, that you name it. And they're all here. Some of these guys are committed. We've got guys that are committed to Notre Dame, to Ohio State, to LSU. Some of these guys are deciding and will probably decide sometime in the next few months where they're going to go to school. And these will be hotly contested recruiting battles between some of the biggest names in the country.
No doubt. Well, again, we're just really honored to be here. Thank you all for having us so much. Thank you to Shannon, Terry, and to Grant and everybody. One of the reasons that I wanted to start with you today, last week, you know, we had a big information dump come on us with this House versus the NCAA lawsuit. I was hoping maybe you could just break it down from start to finish, because there are listeners across the country here. They love college football like the rest of us.
But they get so bored and they go to sleep as soon as they start talking. Trust me, I know I do a show about college football every day. I'm like, do I talk about this? Do I really want to put everybody? Because I'm convinced people don't care how the money gets to the players.
Sure. No,
as long as the game, as long as you tell them what channel the game is on and when it's on,
sure,
they're good. But no, this is a huge monumental thing. Like, the schools are going to pay the players directly. And so what happened is there was a case in the Northern District, California, so in Oakland, House versus the NCAA, and it was basically former athletes suing for back pay, saying, hey, NIL should have been a thing when we played, and you were breaking the Sherman Act by not letting us do it, so you owe us.
So class action and antitrust.
Correct, okay. Correct, which means massive damages if you lose in court. The NCAA knew it was going to lose in court, and so they and the power conferences, who were the other defendants in the case, got together and decided to settle it. And they settled it for essentially $2 billion in back pay. $2.7 billion in back pay. $0.7 billion I probably wouldn't leave out. That's $700 million, a lot of money. So that's the back pay part of it. The other part of it is, for 10 years going forward, all the schools in those conferences agree that they're going to give 22% of their revenues, which would be television revenue, ticket revenue, donor revenue, to the athletes. And so basically 22% of the average revenues for a power conference school.
So, how'd they arrive at that figure?
A lot of negotiating back. Yeah. You ever bought a car?
You know, negotiating with who?
Though? They not slide the you athletes, the piece of paper. Right? Not the athletes, and this is the key.
Because that's collective bargaining.
CBA.
This was the conferences negotiating with the class, which is okay. The plaintiffs. But as you said, the class is not necessarily the athletes. Now, here's the tricky part. The plaintiff's attorneys, who are making massive bank off of this thing, and who are now the people, like, so Jeffrey Kessler is one of the attorneys for the plaintiffs. He was one of the people who helped get free agency into the NFL. Like, his place in history is kind of set in stone now. Got free agency to the NFL, got the NCAA to allow schools to pay athletes. Like, he's a big deal. But at a certain point, when you realize you're going to settle this thing, you kind of start working together. And so the plaintiffs work together with the schools and the conferences and the NCAA. And the way they do it is the next 10 years, players want this money. They have to opt into it. And if you opt in, it says you can't sue them over this stuff. And so what they're hoping is that creates enough disincentive for any other plaintiff's attorneys to create another class action lawsuit. Sure. They wouldn't be able to find enough people willing to sue or capable of suing. So that's what they're hoping, is the lawsuits will go away. Now, the judge still has to approve this. And there's also the matter of, you can't impose a salary cap unilaterally. You can't without collective bargaining.
Exactly.
As you said. So if they're not going to bargain with the players, they're still going to get sued over and over and over again. So the question is, will they get to the point where they collectively bargain with the players? Now, I do think there's a way to make this work where you might be able to kind of calm down the lawsuits. And I think this is what they have in mind, even though they're not saying it out loud right now. Basically, you have this money that'll come from the schools. We don't know how much is going to go to football, how much is going to go to basketball, how much is going to go to volleyball players, but you'll split it up among all your athletes in some way, shape, or form. NIL is not going anywhere.
No.
NIL is not going away. And although we pretend it's not pay for play, of course it is. It's you know, these guys that are here are going to sign NIL deals, because this revenue sharing won't go into effect until the 25 school year. But they'll sign NIL deals that'll start paying out when they get to campus in the spring, in January. And it'll say, you know, for market, you're going to help market us in exchange for this money. You're going to market these products. But it's really for their value as players, because their value as pitchmen is not that great yet. Mm-hmm. Now, we've got the Cavender twins behind us, the basketball players from Miami. Their value as pitch people is quite high, because they have millions of social media followers. But these muscular gentlemen behind us, they're very valuable as football players.
Did Michael Jordan say that? People only want my endorsement because of how good I am on the basketball court. But you're a former college athlete. How do you feel about this?
I don't know. The more I think about it, I just don't know what can ruin college football. I don't think there is something. The only way
don't have the games on television.
Maybe I think an asteroid would have to hit the earth to stop. To be honest, but are we going to get? You said salary cap. You mentioned salary cap. What about Title IX? Right? Are there going to be a lot of sports that get cut from this?
Well, that's what the ADs want you to believe.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. If they care enough about those sports, they will raise the money to keep them.
Hmm.
If they don't care, they won't. Mm-hmm. And so all of the people who buy everything the ADs say, because remember, all the ADs have been saying, well, this thing will be a disaster if it happens. Then it happens and it's not a disaster.
Yeah.
So they're lying to you about this and trying to create a panic. If they wind up cutting sports, it's because they don't care.
Okay.
It's on them. It is their job to fund them.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, the people whose sport makes the money should get the money.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And like, if your sport makes nothing, then you should get a percentage of nothing.
I agree with that.
Yeah, no doubt. So how do you think that'll impact walk-ons? We've heard that. Is that just another selling point from ADs? Because I'll tell you, as a former Division I football player, walk-ons are the lifeblood of college football.
I'm a former walk-on.
Yeah,
so
you need
them. I tell you all about that. But here's the interesting part of that. So instead of scholarship limits, they're going to have roster caps. So instead of saying you can have 85 scholarships, but you can have walk-ons that take you up to this number, they're going to say you can have X number of players. Now, football would like that number to be like 120, which is where the rosters are now, 120, 130. Basketball will want 15 to 18, depending on how many walk-ons they kept. Baseball is going to want 32. You know, they're going to, or excuse me, maybe even a little more than that. And that's going to be interesting to see, because the roster cap is going to be, you can have this many players and that's it, but they can all be on scholarship.
Yeah.
So it may change how that works. It may change where a walk-on might go. Now, here's the thing. I find it hard to believe that there'd be a situation where you're a student at the university and they need you and you can play,
mm-hmm.
where they wouldn't take you. They, yeah. they probably have a way to do it. Like, if somebody gets hurt, put them on IR or something like that and open up a roster spot. You can take somebody from the university. There will be ways to make this work, but that part of it will be interesting, because right now, the way the current system is, there's never been a better time to walk on at a power conference school. Mm-hmm.
True.
Because they are using so many scholarships in the transfer portal versus kids coming out of high school. If you want to go and develop and build, you know, be the depth somewhere, like, let's say you walk on at a school right now and a bunch of your teammates enter the transfer portal after the season and you don't get enough transfers in to replace them all, which sometimes that happens, all of a sudden you just moved up the depth chart.
Yeah.
You might get a scholarship. So it will change the dynamics of that considerably. It's a question of how. And like, we're in SEC country right here. Baseball is really interesting to me. Yeah. SEC baseball is a huge sport.
Huge.
Not profitable at most of the schools still, though. But they spend a fortune on it because they want to be the best at it. They want to win at it. Baseball in the NCAA right now allows 11.7 scholarships. There's hardly any college baseball players on a full scholarship.
Yep.
I guarantee you, when this goes through, every SEC team will fund scholarships for every roster.
The reasoning for that is Title IX, though. We were just talking about that today. Some of the best baseball players I played with at Michigan weren't even on partial scholarships, because to make up for 85 scholarships on a football team when there's no female football team, that's like 6 or 7 girl sports you have to have.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting to see if now men's sports have been getting cut for years because of that. Wrestling has been decimated by that. Men's swimming has not done well. Men's soccer barely exists anymore compared to how plentiful women's soccer teams are. Men's volleyball, same thing. Mm-hmm. So that's already been happening. The Title IX issue, so somebody asked Jeffrey Kessler about that.
Okay.
The attorney who negotiated this settlement. And he basically goes, that's going to get settled in the courts. So somebody's going to sue over this.
Yeah.
And the courts are going to come and say,
just good for attorneys. So,
listen. Billable hours remain undefeated.
Undefeated. go ahead,
Blake. Well, anyway, we got you here. I want to talk about this. The Jalen Rashada, Billy Napier situation.
Yeah.
Speaking
of attorneys, billable
hours. Yeah, we're talking about suing people and attorneys. Well, give me your thoughts, and what do you think is going to happen?
So this is a really interesting one. So Jalen Rashada is now a quarterback at Georgia, or is headed to Georgia from Arizona State. So he was a 4-star recruit in the class of 2023. Originally commits to Miami. Flips to Florida, we find out, because he was signed to a 4-year, $13.89 million contract. And the money behind said contract didn't exist.
Yeah.
So the collective terminates the contract the day after the first payment would have been due. And he still signs with Florida. Now, that's where the interesting part is, because in the lawsuit, he has accused Billy Napier of saying, hey, this booster, Hugh Hathcock, who's another one of the defendants in the lawsuit, he's going to wire you $1 million as long as you sign today. He'll wire you $1 million tomorrow. And they're alleging that Billy Napier said that to Jaden Rashada's father. Yeah. They have not provided any proof of that statement. And, you know, Billy Napier got asked about it at SEC spring meetings, and he said, well, I'm comfortable with all the actions I took. So basically, it would be up to the Rashadas to prove what happened. But here's the thing. I don't think it's good for Billy Napier or Florida in general, if this thing goes to discovery, if people start getting deposed in this case. And here's where it gets a little sticky. In a lot of cases, neither party really wants discovery to happen. They just want a settlement to happen and be done. But if you're Billy Napier, you really can't be writing a check to one of Georgia's quarterbacks.
Can't afford
as Florida's coach. Like, that's just a bad
look. Is that bad PR?
That's a bad
look. Will
that
be taught in every PR class moving forward?
So you've got that. And then here's the other thing. Jaden Rashada and his family and his agents and everybody around him in his orbit, they have been portrayed as villains, as greedy, as incompetent. They really can't look any worse than they already have. So there's really nothing that could come out in discovery that can hurt them.
Mm.
And that makes them extremely dangerous.
Sure.
Well, to Billy Napier and company.
What I found most fascinating about that, apart from a high school quarterback getting offered $13.8 million. Not Johnny Manziel or Ken Newton.
And also not the one who was considered the best in that class.
Yeah. What I found most fascinating is Billy Napier. I read through the entire contract, and on that contract, on the back page.
You're welcome. I got that for you.
Thank you. we were talking about you a lot the day we ran this story, but I read the contract. The names on the back of there are not Billy Napier. He didn't sign it.
Nope.
It's not Hathcock, right?
No.
It's Edward Rojas.
It's the Gator Collective, which no longer exists.
Why are they named? Why isn't he named?
You can't sue something that doesn't exist.
So even Mr. Rojas, because that's the only name.
Mr. Rojas has divested himself of this, and you could sue him.
Fair enough.
But I'm not sure you're going to get a whole lot out of that. So,
all right. So
that's part of why the collective dissolved.
Yeah,
and they reformed as a different. With
so that money
different
literally
backing,
was
different
never
everything.
There. They literally wrote that $13.85 million on a piece of paper, knowing that they would never pay any of it.
Knowing they'd never pay it. So I've done a ton of this stuff on this. I've talked to a lot of the people involved. I'm fascinated if it does come to depositions because I know what some of the people are going to say in those depositions, and I think it's going to tell a little bit different story, but. The thought was they were acting as the pass-through between the money and Rashada.
Yeah.
Now, when I was doing the story, everybody sort of insinuated that Hugh Hathcock was supposed to be the source of the money, but nobody would ever say that on the record.
Okay.
That's now been said in the lawsuit.
Yes.
He's been sued. I've tried to reach out to him. He has not responded. I'm curious if to hear what he would say. Because what sounds like happened is he said, yeah, I got it. I'll cover it. Without knowing what the numbers were. The numbers come back, everybody signs it, and he's like, wait, what?
Yeah,
what
are we doing? Yeah.
Because
buyer's remorse.
No one in their right minds would pay that person that level of money.
The more we talk about it, it just really sounds like they didn't want him to go to Miami.
Yeah,
They didn't want him to go to Miami.
I think you're onto something, because this is something we talked about on my show last week. Like, if he's not committed to Miami, if he's committed to Ole Miss, Texas A&M, LSU, I don't think any of this happened.
I agree with you.
I think it was a pissing match between boosters at rival schools, and that's why they were so hell-bent on making
it. And if I'm mistaken, they're squaring off game one, correct?
They are.
Florida and Miami.
In Gainesville. 3:30 in the afternoon, August 31st. Notoriously cool weather in Gainesville on August 31st.
Yeah.
It is going to be a pressure cooker. In many, many ways.
Miami came out 3.5-point favorites.
Wow.
That is such a
weird game.
Oh, I can't bet it.
If you look at it, just you're comparing rosters, you're like, Miami's got this. But Mario Cristobal has not yet shown himself to be the game day coach.
Yeah, take a knee.
That makes you confident that even when he's got the best roster, that he's going to win.
Sure.
Billy Napier hasn't been that kind of game day coach either since he's been at Florida. I have no idea what happens. All I know is the fan base of the losing team is going to melt down.
Oh.
I'm calling this the Pitchforks and Torches Bowl because it doesn't matter who wins and who loses. The fan base of the losing team is going to be out for blood. They want that coach fired.
That's how it should be between
day.
Miami
who,
and
who,
between
who needs it more? Billy Napier or Mario Cristobal?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Yes. That's the problem. That's what makes that game so fascinating. I don't know if it's going to be the best game of the opening day. Because you got Clemson, Georgia right before that. You've got some other really good games that weekend. You got LSU, USC on Sunday. But that game feels like it's the most dramatic because we will overreact to it the most, no matter what happens.
I'll tell you one more thing I do know about that game. If it comes down to taking a knee for Miami to win, Mario Cristobal will take the knee.
He's got to at this point. Yeah. Y'all know after the Georgia Tech thing happened last year, like, everybody found video of the same thing happening when he was
at Oregon. Yeah.
So
they sent it to us.
It's never going to happen again. He's going to take the knee. He has said that. He knows that. He's going to take a knee.
One more question. We're here with Andy Staples. Again, you know, we're going to let you plug your show at the end. If you don't know who Andy Staples is, I don't know if you're really a college football fan. Just hit on this one more topic because I know you've spoken about it before and it's something I've been advocating for on our show. What really makes this whole NIL and pay-for-play, you know, situation so much more complicated is we're talking about public institutions.
Yeah.
I come from, both my parents are academics, right?
Yep.
Professors. They work in administration. The first and foremost responsibility of these institutions is to deliver education, right? And I know that we all love college football. I know that's where a lot of the money.
I have a saying, Mr. Cohn, that the business of college is much bigger than the business of college sports.
Okay, sure.
These are multi billion-dollar
And especially when you're starting to talk about the universities with endowments, like, which sometimes are like private versus
these
public.
These athletic budgets are a drop in the bucket compared to the total budget of the university.
So talk about that then when I ask this question, because I've seen you advocate, and there are many others around the country, a lot of athletic directors too, say, why can't the money from the distribution deals to the athletes come directly from the conferences and sort of, you know, not necessarily have it come from these institutions where it's already complicated because they're public institutions?
Right. And that idea is something I first heard from different athletic directors.
Okay.
And that it makes sense because here's the thing, like, I'll give you an example. The state of South Carolina. State employees can't unionize. They're not allowed. State law forbids it. So how could South Carolina and Clemson athletes unionize if they were employees of the university? How could you collectively bargain with them at all? It's not allowed by their state law. Well, if they were employees of the SEC and the ACC, respectively. Now, Clemson may not be in the ACC at that point, but that's
what do you know?
Another conversation.
What do you know that we don't know,
Andy?
Well, they are suing the ACC to get out.
We do know.
But so let's say the South Carolina players were employees of the SEC. They are now employees of a private entity that is subject only to Alabama employment law. So you have one state's employment law that you have to deal with, which takes away a lot of the complications, and it's a private entity. That allows you a little more latitude to do some stuff. Now, the schools still don't want them to be employees of anything. The conferences, because they're run by the schools, don't want them to be employees of anything. And what I find interesting is that some of the people trying to organize this, because look, here's the thing you have to remember about college sports. There's always somebody trying to make a buck off of everything.
Yep.
So you've had union groups sniffing around for over a decade trying to be the union, trying to be the players union for football players, basketball players, you name it.
Yeah.
Some of the people who are doing that are now saying, well, they don't have to be employees. You could still bargain with them as a block.
Or as contractors, right?
Correct. They could be, you know, look, we live in the gig economy these days. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, a lot of folks paying taxes off 1099s.
Sure. I did it for years.
Exactly. I mean, anybody, like on my side of the business, like if you've been a writer, you've done it.
Yeah.
So it is possible. Now, according to the folks who are doing the organizing, it's funny because they now are saying, well, we need an act of Congress because the schools and the conference have been saying, we need Congress to come in.
Yeah, yeah.
Like now you've got the union organizers saying, we need an act of Congress so they can negotiate with them if they're not actually employees. But I do think there's a way. There is a path to that, and I do think ultimately that is the path they're going to have to go down, because if they don't, whether this settlement goes through and works as intended or not, that period's going to run out. The lawsuits would just start again. The only way to keep yourself lawsuit-proof, now you can, look, anybody can sue anybody, but NFL players aren't suing the NFL saying the salary cap is unjust. Because the Players Association agreed to it.
Yep.
So that's the best way to do it. That's the best way
straight
to handle
with the
it.
Conferences. Is, I like it.
And I think more importantly, it's not, it's because everybody's focused on the money. I think if you ask coaches, the money's secondary. They're not as worried about the money as they are having rules that can be enforced, having rules for player movement that can be enforced. Like you can't, none of this addresses the transfer situation.
Yeah.
Because the transfer rules are hung up in federal
court. See, my thought on that, though, is if the agreement is directly between the athletes and the conferences rather than directly with the schools. I mean, if the top quarterback here, we're going to see, you know, the guy kid committed to Tennessee right here from Brentwood. If you make the connection directly with the conference, then there could be a stipulation upon signing saying, well, now you can't transfer to another SEC school.
Correct.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And you sign that.
Yes. Yeah. As long as, listen, if you have employment deals, although it's funny because the Federal Trade Commission just outlawed non-competes. So that's
now it gets more complicated. Yeah.
A whole other can of worms. But I do think there's a way, there's a path to that.
Okay.
If they are willing to go down that road where they're either employees or contractors, you can make that happen and you can have rules if you collectively bargain them that would be, it would keep this all time, all the time, free agency.
Sure.
At bay.
Which is what most people want.
Coaches hate. Yes. And that's 100%. The part people hate. Like, if you knew, now I'd be curious, like these guys behind us, like if I were one of them, so all of these guys have dozens of scholarship offers.
Yeah.
If I were one of them, I would not sign more than a 1-year deal. Like, let's say that system's in place and you can sign 1 year deal, 2 year deal, 3 year deal, 4 year deal. If you're them, you sign a 1 year deal.
Mm-hmm.
If you're me coming out of high school and somebody wants you at your school, I'm signing a 4 year deal.
Oh, yeah.
You say because
that,
that's
what happens, what happens when you go and you underperform as a freshman and it takes you 2 or 3 years to be able, or you get injured. That's another situation because it's more than just about the money. There's going to be health benefits that come into this, healthcare, all sorts of things in the conversation.
Yeah. So and it really would depend on your leverage and everything else. It's just like anything else.
We've seen LeBron do that for years.
Yeah.
LeBron, I'm not signing more than a one-year deal because I know the next year I'm still going to be as sought after.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that's the thing. We'll see how this goes, but that is, I am convinced more than ever that's going to happen. Like, if you'd asked me 5 years ago, I'd have said, no, never going to happen. Mm-hmm. The schools will never go down that path. I think they're, because I think the coaches are just absolutely fed up with this. The ADs are fed up with this.
Yeah.
And there's a couple things they're fed up with. They're fed up with all the time free agency. Constantly recruiting your own roster. That sucks. Let's be real. Like, recruiting's, trying to convince 17-year-olds to come to your school is hard enough, but trying to convince 19-year-olds to stay at your school constantly is a pain in the ass.
No doubt.
So they get paid a lot of money, yes, and I don't feel that sorry for them, but it does suck. I'm not going to lie about that. The other piece of it is the ADs are sick of asking the donors to foot the bill for,
oh, I bet,
for paying the players. And even with the revenue sharing, they're still going to have to do that. If they cap the amount the schools can give, they're still going to have to beg the donors for more money to pay the players. And I'm telling you, the donors are going to get fed up with
that. I've heard from these donors.
They hate it.
We're tired of it. We're not getting any ROI. And this idea that, oh, well, these billionaires in Texas have all the money in the world. How do you think they got that?
Yeah, there's a reason they got all that money.
Business. Yeah, they ain't spending stuff. Well, there's no return on investment.
And how insulting is it? And I know the coaches hate making these pitches, but when the coach or the AD gets up there and goes, well, we need you to dig deep or we're not going to be able to compete.
Yeah.
Like, shut up. Yeah. We see your TV contract.
Yeah.
Compete.
Liar.
I love it. Andy Staples, thanks so much for joining us. Please tell everybody where they can watch your show.
You can watch me on the On3 Sports YouTube channel. You can watch me on my own Twitter feed at Andy_Staples. We are live every day, 7 p.m. Oh, shoot. I got the old time slot.
Yeah.
I'm a morning guy now.
Yeah.
I'm a morning person now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I am 8 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Central Time, Monday through Friday. And then once the season starts, we are going at night. Post-game shows on Saturday.
Wow.
My favorite show of the week. It is, the chat is on fire.
Oh, I bet. I bet. We do one Sunday morning, and people are just
best show
freaking
of the week.
Well, that'll
out.
Be the best. They can stay up with me and get up with you.
There
come
we
on
go.
Now, what's better than that?
We're best friends here. I love to see it. Thank you so much for joining us.
The GOAT, Andy Staples. Really appreciate
always
it, Andy.
Always insightful, Mr. Andy Staples. Thank you. And again, we're live here. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and tell the chat. All right. If you're in YouTube, if you're in Daily Wire, you're in X, I'm not going to be able to talk in the chat today. If you do donate, it will all get read. Just know that you are getting paid attention to. Just a little bit different format today. Just know Booster Club, Trust Tree, we're still all in this thing together.
Love it. You can set your mic right there, Andy. Thank you so much. We're going to keep going live here. Remember, we're live. We're on a rooftop. We're just going to roll with the punches here. We're trying to get some big-time guests in to give us some insight here. What is the chat saying right now?
All right, Chad, hit that like. Hit that subscribe button. Let's go to Dante47. Dante, really appreciate you joining the chat. He says, guys, I'm loving the setup. Huge fan of Crane & Company. And on three, what's been the coolest thing about the day so far?
What do you think?
That's tough. Man, just seeing all the athletes.
Yeah.
Seeing all the athletes out, man. You know, I haven't been around it in so long, especially when you get to coaching and you're playing, you miss it. You miss it. And you can talk about it all you want, but when the guys get around you, just a little bit of a different vibe to me.
Great energy, isn't there?
It was great energy.
Especially when you're around industry leaders, you know, like this at On3. So, again, thank you to Shannon Terry and everybody for having us out today.
All right, let's go to Donnie52. Donnie, what's up? He said, what players are we interviewing? And are we interviewing any quarterbacks?
We'll see.
Woo,
we'll see.
Donnie.
Whoever they bring over to us, we're going to try and get as many interviews as possible today.
Let's go to CJ. So it should be a 2 year minimum, but 2, 3, or 4 year contracts, renegotiating it at contract end. I don't like this.
You don't like that?
I don't like this. Can we just play football? I was thinking about it earlier. Do you think if you were a coach, all right, is it easier to recruit now than it was back in the day? Or is it harder?
That's the exact question I asked Shane Beamer at last SEC Media Days, right? And because Shane Beamer recruited me when he was at Mississippi State with Sylvester Croom, and he's such a great recruiter. He almost got me to go to Mississippi State instead of going to Michigan. And I asked him. I said, "Hey, now that it's more of a financial situation directly with the players, how has the recruiting changed?" And he basically said, "Look, you still have to be a people person. You still have to go into people's living rooms and convince these mom and dads to trust you with their 18-year-old children that they're sending away from home the first time." So I appreciated his insight on that. At the same time, the more and more that young kids are saying, "Hey, what's in it for me, and what's on the bottom line that I'm signing?" Then yeah, it does. I mean, like, how often do you hear free agents in the NFL saying, "I'm going to play for X team because I really love their coach"?
Yeah.
And more often than not, it's because that team's paying me more money than where I am right now, and that's the ultimate consideration.
All right, let's go to DCH. What's up, brother? He said, talking about the Jalen Rashad of Florida situation, is Billy Napier in trouble whether or not he wins or loses this?
That was great insight there from Andy Staples.
Yeah, it really was.
And again, Andy Staples is the one who got us that that contract for us to read over last week when we did this. Look, I don't know. I think this is going to depend on what Billy Napier does on the football field, right? I mean, if Florida wins 10 games next year, he's not going anywhere.
Which I don't think they will. They'll be lucky to win 5 games, to be honest. And I really think we talked about it with Andy. That week one matchup is huge for both these guys.
Yeah.
For both these guys. So we'll see who comes back. Let's go to TT. What's up, brother? He says, are y'all interviewing the quarterback who committed to LSU, the number one quarterback in the nation?
Bryce Underwood, right?
Yeah, that's Bryce.
From Belleville, Michigan?
From Bell.
Didn't get. Of course, I want to.
How?
I want to ask
you a little butthurt about it.
I just have a lot of questions I'd like to ask.
What did you do? What did you do? Huh? I mean, how do you think the Georgia?
I'll tell you what I did.
People are right now. You went all the way up to Michigan.
I'll tell you exactly why. Because they had a quarterback by the name of Matt Stafford that year. Still, hey, the
look,
worst decision they ever made. Right?
You could have got in there competing. With Matt.
Yeah.
Who would have known?
Look, I love Mark Richt, but once Matt Stafford committed from Highland Park, let's just say Georgia wasn't beating down my door to become a Bulldog. You know, the whole South was locked up. They had Christian Ponder at Florida State, where I wanted to go. You know, Auburn had 2 quarterback commits, Neil Caudle, Steven Ensminger.
You should have went to Auburn.
That's what I said.
You should have went to Auburn, Dave. Come on, dude. Let's go to Centaur Thrax. He said, how do you get players from opting out of bowl games?
Again, until the players
you pay
actually, them. Yeah, and that's and collectively bargain to their contract.
The more we start talking about college football, it's just pay them. No matter what it is, just pay them.
Yeah.
Just pay them. There's no one cares about education anymore. Education doesn't matter, Dave. It's about winning football.
It mattered to me. That's why I'm not in this class action lawsuit. I didn't want to be a part of it, and I didn't join the one with EA Sports when they sued the video games. I knew what I was signing up for. I was grateful to do it. I really
could you,
I don't want
could
to be a
you
part
go
of this.
Back? Could you go back and join and sue? For NIL money.
Well, look, I still have a year of eligibility left.
That's what I'm
saying.
So
I'm just waiting for peak performance.
If Peyton Thorne doesn't work out this year, we need you. All right, we need you. We need a big body.
Heart's already broken.
No,
Coach Tupperville.
With that receiver class this year, come on, Dave. You'll throw 3K, 3,500 yards.
You think so?
25 TDs.
I was throwing in the driveway.
9 picks.
No,
which
I'm not throwing nine
out.
Picks.
You're throwing it so much. We're not throwing
nine.
We're an up-tempo
picks.
Offense, coach.
All right, here. Read one more read one more directly to the chat. I got a question for our producer.
Okay. All right. Let's go to David S. Chat. Since we're now about to see schools directly pay athletes, how worried should the smaller schools be? Well, they should be extremely worried. There's not like guys. We're going to get to the point to where it's just the big schools. That matter, the money makers that matter. Like these little nuanced schools, they're going to fall by the wayside. They're going to drown in the water of NIL.
Schools.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know how they make it out unless you just give them their own division. Because how does San Jose State, you know, compete? How do you compete? You can't pay kids like other kids are paying them. Transfers, maybe.
That's why I thought our conversation with Josh Pate that we put out last week, which thanks everybody who tuned in to watch
JP,
us talk with Josh Pate. You know, that's why I was so interested to see what his thoughts were on the group of five, quote unquote group of five. This terminology changes all the time, but them having their own playoff system. And I thought he gave some great insights into that as well. Trey, do we have our first ad read that we can throw to for today? I think we have some pre-recorded ads. Tell me if that's the case. All right. Throw to that first ad reads, Bet Online. Bet Online. Do it for me, brother.
All right. Bet Online. Look behind us. We have our beautiful Bet Online board of truth, love, life, and unfortunately sometimes loss. But the fun's in playing the game. And when you go to betonline.ag, not betonline.com, not betonline.fed, betonline.ag, they give you the option to bet on political events, sporting events, really any events. So whether Hunter Biden's going to serve jail time before 2025, which we all know he won't, I'd take the under on that, or who will be the next Republican Speaker of the House. Wouldn't touch that one. The political betting allows you to wager on real-world events outside of the realm of sports. Or if you're a diehard sports fan, BetOnline makes sports betting more accessible and convenient than ever before. With just a few clicks, you can place bets on your favorite teams or events from the comfort of your own home. BetOnline prides themselves on their higher-than-average betting limits of $25,000, and you can increase your wagering amounts by contacting their player services desk or phone by email. Their website's unbelievably easy to navigate, so go spice things up with a friendly wager at betonline.ag. Go to betonline.ag to place your bets today. Use promo code Booster, get a 50% instant deposit bonus of up to $1,000. That's betonline.ag with promo code Booster. Bet Online, where the options are endless. And so is the fun.
And so is all the fun. Exactly. We don't have the Bet Online Jumbotron behind us right now because we have a swimming pool and we have the Nashville skyline behind us.
How did Jake do that if he was in France? But he.
Look, traders find a way. Traders find
it's
a way.
Inception.
But right there. The number one player y'all were asking if we were going to interview, Mr. Bryce
He's
Underwood,
here.
Guess what? We have him right here with us right now from Detroit, Michigan. What's going on, man?
What's up, dude?
What's going on? How you guys doing?
Good, man. You having fun out here?
Yes, sir. I'm enjoying it. Just got out here. You know, great vibes already. So.
Okay. So just tell me so far, how's the On3 experience been? What have you done today? Who have you talked to?
It's been great, honestly. I just got here probably like an hour ago.
Okay. Okay.
Just been enjoying it, getting interviewed and stuff like that. So. Just enjoying all the vibes there.
Love it.
So, as you know, I played quarterback at Michigan.
Yeah. He's hurt.
And, the number one thing people were wanting me to ask you is, did Michigan get legitimate consideration, you know, being down the street from you? I know you're committed to LSU right now. And look, when you try to decide between Michigan and LSU,
he's from Georgia. Yeah. He's from Georgia now, and
I wasn't the number one quarterback in my class, man.
He went all the way to Michigan. All right,
okay.
So is he a little
buzzer? I had to go 1,000 miles away from home.
So why LSU?
Development, the quarterback position.
And like, they've had a
– As you go as far as, like, history and things like that, like, that was a big thing for me. Like, for Michigan, you got
– You're fine.
Like, you don't have the same amount of development as, like, mm-hmm. LSU has at the moment.
Especially so. I didn't mean to cut you off, Bryce. I'm sorry. Especially with Jaden Daniels after winning the Heisman this year.
Heard of him.
Who's going to be really good.
And both schools put out top 10 quarterbacks in the NFL this year.
Absolutely. Is there something about the system? You saw the draft. I mean, Malik Nabers. Okay. I mean, a lot of people call LSU wide receiver. You too, DBU Definitely. With Ohio State. Is a lot of it have to do, not only are you going to be in a great system mm-hmm. under Brian Kelly, which is one of the most winning coaches in college football, but the athletes that are going to surround you, is that another reason why you chose LSU?
Of course, because they bring in the best that I need. So that's another big thing as well as that.
Yeah, the fit's just going to be amazing.
Yeah, so what part of your game right now are you working on heading into your last year of high school where you say, like, hey, these are a couple things that I still need to develop in order to play, to be the number one quarterback when I'm coming out of college and not just high school?
Honestly, being able to be quicker on my thought process, you know, just getting into my stuff. Like, my thought process is real quick, you know, I'm real quick on my toes, stuff like that, but I feel like I could be even faster for the next level. So that's the main thing I've been working on.
Yeah. I love it.
You excited for this new NCAA football game coming out?
Of course.
Yeah.
My girlfriend pre-ordered it for me.
No there way. You mean your wife?
Oh, yeah.
If she's ordering, she's ordering an NCAA game, it don't get much better than that.
So, I mean, we're here, we're at an NIL summit, right? So, can you just speak to what this entire process has been like? I mean, look, I was coming out in 2006, and it was still a chaotic time, right? You're trying to be the best football player you can be on the field. At the same time, these schools are calling, they're writing letters, your parents are trying to identify who they can trust and send their kid off to school with. Like he said, I went 1,000 miles away from home, and I was grateful to do so. I mean, the winningest college football program of all time, I didn't know where I was going to land. All I knew is I wanted to play college football. Now it's even more complicated because you have this ability to capitalize off your name, image, and likeness. You have these collectives. Can you just speak to, like, what this entire process has been like for you, you know, what some of the trials and tribulations have been just to be able to get to this point where you're committed to play football at LSU?
Honestly, it's been as simple as what I could put it as, like keeping the main thing, which is me getting into the NFL. So whatever that has to do, it has to get me there. That's what I'm willing to do. So no matter what that is.
And if there's a team that could ever do it, it's LSU. Do you have a message to LSU fans out there?
Soon to see the real me, you know?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I love it. Bryce, man, we really appreciate it, brother. Enjoy the rest of your day, dude.
Thanks for stopping by, man. We appreciate it. Best of luck to you, all right?
Hey, go kick some ass. And we all glad you chose LSU and not Michigan. And we're all stoked about it.
If you decommit, you call me, all right? We'll have a heart-to-heart.
They've got enough. Appreciate it, Bryce. That's
what we got in the chat right now.
That's Bryce Underwood right there, man.
Yeah.
Absolutely stud.
Yeah, it's going to be a star, man.
They're rack. Just rolling them in at LSU.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Rolling them in, Hugh.
Tell me about it.
Just rolling them in.
Look, we're good in Ann Arbor.
We have Peyton Thorne.
We're good. We're good in Ann Arbor. What's the chat saying?
All right, let's go to Ferris Khan. Ferris, what's up? He said, reality, Michigan did not have the money versus LSU. This is 100% of the decision, in my opinion, for Underwood. Michigan lacking resources?
You know, I think Jim Harbaugh was frustrated with the NIL situation at Michigan when he left. I can't speak to everything that was going on there behind closed doors, but I know our biggest rival, Ryan Day at the Buckeyes, said, look, I need $13 million to be able to keep this roster together and continue developing it. And I think he got $15 or $16 million, and now they are one of the top three teams in the country heading into this year. So,
all right, let's go to
the- Hold on 1 second. Well, I think we got the Cavender twins coming in right now. Is that the case?
I don't know. I think so. I think so.
Hey, we're ready whenever. Y'all ready?
Y'all good right now?
Let's do it. How are you? David.
Hey, I'm Blaine. Nice to meet you.
Haley, nice to meet you.
Hannah.
Hannah.
Nice to meet you. Hannah, I'm Blaine.
Pleasure Haley. To meet you. Here's your mic. Yes.
So when did y'all get in?
We landed this morning.
Landed this morning. How's it? Y'all
in Miami?
Yeah.
Miami. Yeah. Have you ever been to Nashville?
Yeah.
Yes. Y'all like it?
I love Nashville.
It's a great
Nashville,
it's
Miami.
A great time. Oh, Nashville. Man. It's hard to be.
I love Nashville better than Miami. Nashville's you heard it there. Cool.
I've never been to Miami before.
I think Miami.
Wait, never been to Miami. I've never been to Miami.
Don't say that kind of stuff live.
Well, dude, it's just like, I don't personally. Think I can afford it anyway. I heard a cup of water is $11.
Exactly. It's a lot. But
you know what? Hold on. He's fishing for an invite to Miami.
Right? Oh, really?
No, I'm not, dude.
Oh, okay.
Maybe not. Who knows?
Come to a game.
Yeah, come to a game.
I'm down.
Sure.
Shit, I'm down. So, hey, first of all, thank y'all so much for coming on the show. Really appreciate it. Let's talk a little basketball here.
Yeah.
All right. Y'all are going back to Miami this year, correct?
Yes.
Yep.
What decision made that happen?
Right. So, I mean, I think I'll let Haley start off basically because she made the decision first to go back to basketball. I was recently committed to TCU.
You, yeah.
So I decided that back after I walked. I said I wasn't going to take my fifth year. I missed it a lot. I just think the void of playing competitive basketball at the highest level. I love the game so much. So I decided to go back last September and then I committed to TCU after I reopened it. But I have such a great relationship with the University of Miami's coaching staff. So when they went to Hannah this summer, made me think for a while and understand that even though I gave TCU my word, like I want to play my last year with Hannah. So I'm excited to be back. I have a great relationship with the coaching staff. Very good, tight-knit group, and I want to spend my last year with my twin sister, ultimately. So.
And you got to play with your sister, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think when the opportunity presented itself, it was hard to say no to. And I think, you know, people's timing's differently, even if she is my twin sister.
Yeah.
It kind of hit me a little bit later, and I was blessed enough to have another chance to play with her and go back to play my fifth year. So that's what we decided to do.
I feel like if you have a chance to play a sport in college with your sibling, damn it, you do it.
No doubt. Yeah, yeah. You know, we talk a lot about college football on our show, and a lot of people ask us college football questions. But y'all have proven that you can build, like a successful brand, you know, like playing a different sport. Can you just give our listener just a little background on how y'all became superstars and maybe pass along some advice just in terms of the marketing and the way to advertise yourself?
Right. I think just starting off, obviously when NIL first passed in 2021, nobody knew what to expect. So just kind of going into it, we always just were, our minds were just like, have fun, let's make videos together.
And y'all were at Fresno State at
we
this point
Fresno
already?
State, yes.
Okay.
And then it kind of, right when July 1st passed, we got with the right team, with ESM, our agency. They do a great job of making long-term brands and getting equity within businesses and giving us creative control, which we love. And I think just getting people around you that you trust to be able to make your life more seamless is honestly like the best advice I could give, because being a student athlete, especially on top of running businesses and connecting with brands and all the other extracurriculars that you have to do, it's a lot. So I would just say make sure you plan and organize to get the right people in your corner.
But even before, like, the marketing agencies call, like, y'all started your own thing, right? I mean, weren't you obsessed with, like, hey, this is the type of content we have to put out because this is what our friends and followers want to see and hear from us?
Right. I think at the beginning, before NIL passed, you kind of just do social media for fun, and it was, like, something to do when you weren't playing basketball or just to do with your friends. But as time goes on and you learn a lot about the space and, like, what social media can do for your brand.
Yeah.
How big it is nowadays for businesses, you can really make like your dream job out of it. And I think, you know, we're testaments to that. And just being able to network and connect along the way, it's taught me everything so much so far. Being in rooms with people and just building your own brand and what you want to do with it. So, I would just say to position yourself and protect yourself as much as you can, but soak in every opportunity and take advantage of it.
Both y'all, that's phenomenal points. Y'all could be more correct. This is something I'm going to talk to you, and it's been recent, you know. Women's basketball has been the spotlight the last 2 years. I don't know another time, if there has been another time, that women's basketball has been as big as it is now.
Right.
And I think a lot of that has to do with who? That's Caitlin Clark.
Yeah.
Right? And what two better people to ask, as smart as you all and both y'all are in women's basketball in college, why has Caitlin Clark caught so much hate going to the WNBA? Because at the end of the day, she's bringing eyes to a sport that hasn't got eyes in a long time. Mm. And I'm just surprised that the flack that she has caught when she has reached that next level by WNBA players. Do either of y'all have opinions on that?
I think that's a great question. I think that Caitlin Clark has done so much for the game. I'm a huge fan of her.
Me too.
I think being able to do what she's done at her level and maintain her success with all the hate she does bring is inspiring, I think, to all the younger generations, to ourselves. I do think that's a great question. I'm really...
I'm confused.
Figure out that answer as well, because the money that she generates and the viewership she brings as an individual, that's such a high note for all women's NBA players, because now your league is getting noticed nowadays more than it's ever had because of one person. So why not uplift her?
Look, we all know, like, everybody wants to be Caitlin Clark when it comes to it. I get it. But a superstar can open eyes up and open doors up for what? Other superstars to come along and get in the spotlight.
No, exactly. I think just following off what Haley said, I think, you know, a player with her spotlight and her attention coming into a league and being able to draw so much eyes on it, I think is a win for all women. Like you said, it can provide opportunities down the road that probably weren't going to be there beforehand. And I think not even just Caitlin Clark, like so many other players, Angel Reese, Kim and Brink, all those girls. I think it's crazy to see what they've done. And it's a win for women. So if it's a win for women, I don't know why you would knock it. I'm like so inspired by it. I've never watched women's basketball, I mean, the WNBA more than I have now. So
And what's cool about the WNBA timeline is, I mean, she's just coming off the heels of being the all-time scorer in women's collegiate basketball, coming right off the heels of Final Four appearance. And now she gets to play in the WNBA just a couple weeks after. It's not like the NFL where we'd have to wait 3 or 4 months to see her. So it's kind of cool to see her capitalize on that moment right away.
And it's great. I think it's great also. It's because she's coming off of such a good, successful college career that people are wanting to watch and continue to watch. There's no break, like you said. So, like, her fans are following her to the women's NBA, which is drawing eyes and viewership. And it's all about the revenue and the views that you get, which will drive salaries up even more. So for all women's NBA players, it's very much so of, like, a big win for the league.
Huge win. Huge win. Well, guys, ladies, we can't thank y'all enough for stopping by. I know y'all are busy. I know y'all going to be running around today. Is there anything y'all want to tell y'all's fans before y'all get out of here or what?
Go Canes.
Go Canes.
I want to hear about the WWE quickly, too.
What's next?
With the wrestling and just your whole brand in general?
Right. So we had a long-term deal with them when we were at Fresno State. It was a 2-year deal, and it was awesome just to be able to, you know, experience their fan base. It's unlike anything I've ever seen before. Being able to, we actually came down to Nashville for one of their events. Being able to kind of just like soak that all in. I'm just going to focus on this year and then kind of see what it all plays out.
So the focus is going to be basketball.
There you go.
Yeah, focus right now is definitely basketball and just being able to try to position ourselves up for the future success.
Okay.
So. Canes Natty this year?
Yeah.
People are talking.
Absolutely.
I love it. Thank y'all so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, thanks for having us.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Pleasure to meet you.
Thank you guys for having us.
All right. Feel free. Y'all can set the mics down. You're good to go. Thank y'all. There y'all have it. I mean, don't get much better than that. I mean,
what's the chat saying?
Andy Staples to this. I mean, you throwing up the Canes in your face, Billy Napier. No one cares. All right, let me get in the chats real quick. Let's go to HBH, also known as our boy Heartbroken Hog. Everybody in the chat, really appreciate you in here. Haven't they always had talent, though? Kelsey Plum can't ball and is drop-dead gorgeous, but I still haven't heard of her until Caitlin Clark had become a superstar.
I interviewed Kelsey Plum one time when we were back in Atlanta for the Rich Take on Sports show, so that's why I knew of her. But, yeah, it's a valid point.
Do you think the way Caitlin Clark plays the threes, it's kind of Steph Curry-ish, right?
You know what? I was talking to a friend of mine, Derek. Shout out to Derek. He said this week, he made a great point, which was, you know, I was trying to identify why I never watched the WNBA, and he said the reason was because they never do anything that's going to take my breath away, right? If you watch the NBA, there's all sorts of high flying above the rim.
Yeah.
You're not going to see anything in the WNBA like that can compete with the NBA. And it's different with like tennis. I mean, you know, you can have your breath taken away from a dynamic shot that's hit by a women's tennis player, even though they're not hitting as hard as in the men's game or something like that. But with Caitlin Clark, yes, for the first time, you have someone who can quite literally, with the way she plays, like take your breath away with a play, whether it be hitting 5 3-pointers in a row or hitting one from half court. And I thought that was such an interesting point because she can sort of model her game after what Steph Curry has done in the NBA, whereas WNBA players right now can't really model their game after Vince Young or after Vince Carter or Michael Jordan or someone like that.
I agree. I think we got our next guest ready, and that
Let's
is
our next
Jay.
Guest. And Trey, do we have another ad read to run? Say yes or no. All right, run that second ad read for us, brother.
June 6th marks the 80th anniversary of the Allied invasion of Normandy, where we went over there and kicked their ass.
Hell yeah.
It's more commonly known as D-Day. And our good friends at Black Rifle Coffee are doing something special to commemorate the incredible men who stormed those beaches by land, air, and sea 80 years ago. I've seen it in person. It's life-changing. Evan Hafer and his team will make a series of parachute jumps into Normandy June 4th to June 6th, fully decked out in World War II era uniforms as time marches on. The Black Rifle Coffee crew is making sure they do their part to honor the last of the greatest generation who fought at D-Day while they are still with us. Black Rifle Coffee is a veteran-founded coffee company and is veteran-run, and they proudly serve the people who love this country. A portion of every purchase made at BlackRifleCoffee.com goes to support veteran and first responder causes, from providing funding and equipment to first responders to helping vets fight cancer. Your money goes a long way toward giving back to those who serve our nation. So, how can you help, and how can you drink delicious coffee? You visit BlackRifle.com to join us and the team of veterans commemorating the hard-fought victory at D-Day. That's BlackRifleCoffee.com.
Dude, it's... We can't even do a 60-second ad read before Blaine is arguing with someone already. But go drink Black Rifle Coffee. We know you're
really
drinking coffee. We know you're listening to our show. Why not go ahead and order your Black Rifle Coffee right now? Don't procrastinate. Do it. But we're so excited to have J.D. Pakellin here, our boy from On3. We're so excited to be here. You've already gotten into an argument with Blaine just in this
I love
second.
It. It's phenomenal.
Is it an argument, though?
It felt like healthy discussion.
Well, you know what? It immediately struck me as that's the exact place that we have to start with that conversation right there. These are your words, not mine. You said people are selling Florida down the river this year. People are selling Auburn down the river this year, and they're way too high on Missouri.
Yep.
What do you mean by that?
Missouri won 4 games last year by 1 score.
Mm-hmm.
That's phenomenal. That's phenomenal. That's magic in a bottle. Hard to bottle that up year in and year out, right? And you also lose Cody Schrader, who was your most productive offensive weapon from a season ago. So I like Missouri. I don't know if I like them 10 games as much as they were last year. That's tough to duplicate. Florida, I think a lot of people are taking 5-7 last year and then seeing the schedule for this year, and they're like, all right, well, that's probably what they're going to be. There's no way they're able to be better than they were a season ago. Schedule's brutal. There's no way around it. But you got Graham Mertz, who he's not lighting the world on fire. He's not going to be all SEC.
But he overperformed expectations last year. I watched the kid play a lot of football before he left the Big Ten.
Awesome.
I was and when he was ranked as the last place quarterback entering the SEC, I thought, well, someone's got to be last.
Sure.
Yeah, might as well start there. I watched some of the throws, even right off the bat against Utah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, that's how it's supposed to look.
He's slinging it.
And he was slinging the pill all
slinging
season.
It a lot, man.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you got that, plus the defense is going to be older, if nothing else, which you would hope means improved.
Yeah.
You got Eugene Wilson another year better. So, like, I'm not saying that, you know, Florida's going to end up in Atlanta, but I think there's this thought that, like, they're going to go 5-7, 4-8, which is definitely a scenario in the bag of possibilities.
For sure.
That would surprise me.
Okay, but even flip it. One second. And I want you to save Auburn for last because this is where the real conversation got started here. But even flip it. Even if it's 7-5 and 8-4, because Cole Kublik just came on our show last week and we point blank said, is Billy Napier going to be the head coach at Florida 1 year from now? And he said, I think he will be. Mm-hmm. And I think they're going to overperform expectations. I think their win total right now is like 5.5. Mm-hmm. And to the same point you're making, and I agreed with him on that point. I think they will be on either 500 or the plus side of 500. My question is that enough to save Billy Napier's job, especially with everything else that's going on off the field?
Yeah, 6-6 would worry me. 7-5, I think you talk about, okay, what's the eye test? Like, are we competitive against Georgia? Is it close against Texas? Or are we just getting the brakes beat off us against UCF, and that's one of the five losses? Like, that can't happen. It's got to look a certain way.
How far has Florida fallen that we're talking about? Maybe 7-5 is okay,
guys. That's
the 7-5.
And Auburn, too, from that standpoint. I mean, I'm sorry. I hate to say it, but, like,
it's the truth.
Asking if Auburn's going to go 7-5.
No, it's the truth, man. It's just like, I remember old school Florida used to kick the shit out of everybody.
Yeah.
Out of everybody. And it wasn't a fluke. It wasn't a one-off thing. Recruit better than everybody. And the most of it was speed and defense. That's what people remember, those teams with Patrick Rainey and Chris Thompson. Major ride at
Brandon
safe.
Brandon Spikes.
Poking
Carlos eyes
Dunlap,
out. You know?
Percy Harvin.
Yeah.
All these guys.
Hold on.
Huge,
I just got PTSD.
Huge and fast. Major Wright, when he hit that Oklahoma guy, said he didn't want the ball. He wanted him.
Yeah.
That was the Florida motto. And now it's, damn, hope we go 7-5.
And even all the ifs, I was talking to Keith Niebuhr, who runs our Gators Online site, and he was saying, yeah, you can do the ifs, like, hey, if you stop 4th-and-17 against Missouri, and if you make a field goal against Arkansas, last year 7-5. But the ifs used to add up to 10-2, 11-1. The ifs are now like, maybe we're 7-5 if things break our way last year, and I'm with you, that can't happen. So the question becomes, if they do go 7-5 or 8-4 this year and Billy Napier gets another year, you flip it around, like, that schedule staying the same the year after, and it's not getting any easier.
I think Billy needs to win 8 games.
Has to happen.
I actually agree with him. I don't know if 7-5 is enough, especially depending on what transpires with the off-the-field stuff, with getting sued by your biggest rival's backup quarterback, which Andy Staples.
You love college football.
I do love college football. I love college football. I wish it wouldn't change every single day so much, and I think I speak for a lot of our fans out there. All right, but now do Auburn. You know, and our buddy Jake Crane, he's over in London. He's in Europe right now. We don't know exactly. He's behind enemy lines.
No one knows what he does.
It's a real Owen Wilson situation, so we're holding down the fort. But Jake was one of the biggest proponents for Hugh Freeze to get that Auburn job for several years. And he got that job. So now talk about what you were saying during our ad read when it comes to Auburn.
Yeah, so I wasn't even sure if we were on the air when we were talking. It felt like we were on the air when we were having
a
discussion. The reality, I'll rephrase that. I think you look at last year for Auburn, I look at it as like a graph with data points. Super low data point, New Mexico State. Can't happen, shouldn't happen, no excuse. Mm-hmm. High data points, you play Georgia to the last series. You play Alabama to a miracle play that folks in Auburn, Alabama still shudder about to this day and will shudder about for a very, very long time. To me, I think you can kind of interpret that data how you want to. When we went down to Auburn this past spring, Hugh Freeze was like, yeah, Peyton Thorne didn't get spring practice. And it showed. Like, he was playing catch up, it felt like, for the majority of that past season. Also, I love Rivaldo Fairweather. Like, he's built like Optimus Prime. He can't be your leading receiver.
There's no way.
And win 8 games, 9 games, 10 games, whatever you expect to win at Auburn. So I think adding Cam Coleman, it's a freshman, but we saw what he did in that spring game. Dude's going to be a stud. And then Keandre Lambert-Smith being able to add some explosivity and take some pressure off Cam Coleman. I'm liking the pieces. And last thing I'll say, when we visited, there was a lot of confidence around Hugh Freeze taking over the offense and how that would look. When he had the sticks last year, very different operation, very, very different looking operation than what we saw in other games.
Yeah.
I will say this. I do love what Hugh's done when it comes to up front on both sides of the ball. Right? Depth matters. We are in the SEC. But I always go back to this. You can get all the ornaments and put them on the tree, right? And it can look great, right? But I'll go back. It's the pilot. It's not the plane.
Yeah.
And if Peyton Thorne is the pilot, is the quarterback at Auburn, ceilings cap maybe 8 wins.
Really?
If Hugh Freeze were a defensive specialist and came from that side of the ball, like a Nick Saban or Kirby Smart, I'd be a little more worried right now. Saying, man, are they able to identify quarterback talent right now? But Hugh Freeze has developed so many top-notch quarterbacks. Like, far be it from me to sit here and say, you got the wrong guy, Peyton Thorne's not the guy. That may end up being the case.
Yeah.
But Hugh Freeze sees something in him that he can get to 10 wins with this guy.
Yeah.
So
I mean, even Malik Willis, like, are we sure that he was all, I mean, didn't win the job at Auburn, isn't doing anything in the NFL right now. Hugh Freeze and him at Liberty. Now, it was Liberty. It wasn't the SEC. But, like, they lit the world on fire. And I'm not so sure that Malik Willis is all
well,
that in a bag of chips.
Are good college players and just not NFL guys. I don't think Malik Willis is an NFL quarterback.
That's fair.
Also, which, when he was coming out, we were like, hey, he could be.
I mean, he had certain intangibles that would lead you there. But I don't think from an accuracy standpoint.
I'll say this. The radio in the helmet could be the game changer of all game changers for Peyton Thorne. Andy Staples said this on his show. There were times at Liberty where Hugh Freeze is telling Malik Willis, like, hey, we're throwing it here.
Yeah.
Now, Hugh Freeze on the walkie-talkie saying, all right, this is going to 8 before the play even starts. That could be a game changer. We'll see.
Yeah, it's going to be huge. I was telling these guys about just the dichotomy of the two different offenses that I played for at Michigan. I mean, when Lloyd Carr brought me in, Scott Leffler was the offensive coordinator, and, you know, plays are speed break Detroit right side 300 box Y stick H through or 54X slush. We're getting two.
It's a great
calls,
segment, by the way.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Coming back soon. And then Rich Rodriguez came in. Really, at that point, was known as like the godfather of the spread offense coming in from West Virginia, and we're running Ram Go with four verticals where everyone has an option route, and it's backyard football. And you're eight when you call those type of plays instead of, I mean, Scott Leffler was telling us exactly when a wide receiver was going to get open, mm-hmm. at what point on the field, the yardage on the field, that's who you throw it to. I'm giving you two plays. If you get this coverage, work the field. If you get this coverage, work the boundary. If you get all out blitz, flip the play to the second play. I got you. Whereas when you're calling four verticals where everyone has an option route, it starts turning into backyard football a little more where you can, I mean, and being a mobile quarterback helps you get away with that. But from the sideline, you're able to look over and check with me and get the plays that you want to and get in the right situation. Now that's going to be able to be done through the headset. I think that's kind of what you're speaking to with
Hugh Freeze, it feels a little bit like maybe he's playing Madden back there. The game's coming back, so I guess Hugh Freeze is going to...
I mean, cool, you can play Madden, but if your quarterback sucks, you're not going to win a lot of games.
Yeah, that's
fair.
True.
That's fair.
I do think the run game will Huge. Be a massive, massive crutch in the best way possible.
And like, if you look at Auburn last year, they ran the ball extremely well against good teams.
Yeah.
Georgia ran it all over
them. Over 200
yards. Bama ran it all over them.
Same deal.
Like, and you can do that last year, and that's how Lack – I know he didn't have a lot at the receiver position, but that's how just a lack of talent. And you go back to Michigan State, and when he put up all the numbers, let's really talk about who was on that Michigan State team.
Keon Coleman. Kenneth Walker III.
Like, Peyton Thorne – look, and I get it. You can do the same thing at Auburn if you have the cats.
Right.
Right. But we don't have Keon Coleman.
Right.
We don't have Kenneth Walker. So I'm sorry.
Fair.
And it's tough because Hugh, what you said, is the quarterback guru. Right. He's the quarterback guy. He's like Midas. Everything he touches when it comes to quarterback turns to gold.
Yeah.
Not right now, he's not.
Go ahead, sorry.
Well, I was just going to say he's opening himself up to criticism if it goes poorly this year.
100%.
But also if Peyton Thorne, just like we talked about with Graham Mertz, if he takes that sort of progression this year, Hugh Freeze is going to be able to say, see, I told you, I know what I'm doing. Let me handle the offense.
And I think the question, too, is how much better does Peyton Thorne need to be? Because in both those games you spoke to, Peyton Thorne, they're playing him to a possession, two of the best teams in college football. And Peyton Thorne's got less than 100 yards passing.
Yeah.
Not less than 200, less than 100. He's got a double digit in his box score. Like, that's not winning football, but you're playing Bama to the final score and playing Georgia to the final score.
That was my high school's version of winning football.
I do get worried a little bit when it comes to those games because it's the way they ended.
Yeah.
Right? It's hard to teach clutchness from a player to a coach. It doesn't matter. Mm. Auburn got extremely goofy at the end of that Georgia game and at the end of that Bama.
Brock Bowers took over.
And that, well, hell, double him.
They did a couple times.
Not enough. Brock Bowers getting – the thing about it with the Georgia team, you're going to double Brock. All right, that's fine. We face a healthy Ladd McConkey.
True.
You know, and we couldn't guard either of them. But you're going to double somebody. If I'm going to double somebody, it's going to be Brock. But late game, right? And this is not like Hugh, all right? But it is like who? Auburn. All right? Auburn has a stigma of blowing things just when it matters most. Mm-hmm. All right, from a coaching standpoint, a fan standpoint, an analyst standpoint, as yourself,
sure.
Does that worry you at all?
I think it does, but I think I give a little bit of grace for the fact that it's a year one team. Like, I think it was a year one team.
Mm-hmm.
If we're just going to call a spade, there's no excuse for it, but you're doing year one things. Like, is it ever okay to not put a team away when you got them to 4th and 31? Like, of course not. With that being said.
Even before that.
Yeah.
Right? Backup punt returner comes in. 100%. Head coach doesn't know.
Yeah, like that whole thing is wild. And
when
I would
you were growing up, didn't Alabama have those same problems? Like, you're never more than one coach away from being able to fix that sort of mentality. Was it Ronald Reagan say you're never more than one generation away from, like, losing your freedom?
Are you saying Hugh Freeze is Nick Saban?
No, but I'm just saying that, look, we said the same thing about Texas for the last decade. Steve Sarkisian comes in and says, nah, we're going to change the culture here. Yeah. We're going to be the Texas of old, and they just made the college football playoff.
Yeah, I would be wildly surprised if mistakes and errors like that persist over the next 2 to 3 years at Auburn with Hugh Freeze. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's going to happen.
How about now do a little Midwest edition for
us?
Let's talk about the Buckeyes. Let's talk about Michigan, maybe even Notre Dame. I mean, the Buckeyes are going to come in with a top two or top three roster in the country.
Yeah.
You know, how good are you expecting them to be? Is this a, you know, Ryan Day has to win the national championship this year with all the backing he's gotten with the NIL? Or, you know, hey, we beat Michigan and still made it to the semifinal. Is that good enough?
You know, yeah, I think Michigan's the big one, obviously, right? Like, I don't have to tell you that. Like, he's got to beat Michigan this year. Now, there's also, if you beat Michigan, it's kind of like that if you give a mouse a cookie, they're going to want some milk. If you beat Michigan, well, we want a national championship. I think it's got to be the vibe. But the thing with this team, too, like, I look up and down this roster, there's not a lot of holes, depending on how you feel about Will Howard. Like, on paper, they should play for that national title January 20th in Atlanta. Like, they are that good. Will Howard gets a lot of flack, which to me is a bit puzzling. I think he's an upgrade from Kyle McCord. I think he's substantially more mobile.
I don't know how.
Played much more college football.
You don't think he's an upgrade?
I don't get
like,
that.
And people look, and I've had a conversation with Jake on this show, too.
Yeah.
I know Will Howard's not elite, and I'm not calling him elite.
Sure.
But he's not bad.
Doesn't have to be elite.
I mean, he's a Big Ten champion.
Yeah.
You know, I watched that game against Max Sutton. They're going back and forth, and you're not getting worse.
Yeah.
Going to Ohio State. And look at those guys. They just got that one recruit. I can't remember his name, but he's like 15 and 6'5".
Yeah, Jeremiah Smith.
Is going to be an absolute dog. And Kyle McCord was the only reason they didn't win games.
Yeah. I mean, in the big moments. Because, like, you look at the stat line, and it's like, okay, pretty efficient for the most part during this season. You look at the big games, it's like, dude, we can't have a pick on the final drive against Michigan with a chance to win the game. Like, even the Notre Dame game, it didn't.
Anybody was throwing that pick.
Yeah. All right. Think so?
Okay. Yeah. Okay. CJ Stroud was throwing that
there
pick.
There we go. Too. Okay. Well, there it is. I mean, I guess we'll never know.
Nah.
But, I mean, also, the fact that Will Howard's going into his fifth season playing college football, like Kyle McCord, it was his first time out the chute. And I know he had waited his turn and had been in that system, but, like, at the same time, that heart rate, I think, is a lot lower having played more college football. And Kyle McCord, just, you know, you can't teach experience.
So, all right, so talk about Michigan. Sherrone Moore coming in. I thought he was the natural hire after Jim Harbaugh went back to the NFL to go to the Chargers, just because you got a guy here who was an offensive line coach. He was the offensive coordinator and filled in for your head coach when he was suspended during your national championship winning season. Doesn't mean he's going to be the best coach in the world or the right coach for Michigan to keep 5 years from now. I don't know. But he was the natural evolution when you're running out of time, when your head coach leaves after everyone else has sort of decided what they're going to do. And you're trying to keep a team together in an era where players can transfer at any given time. Can Michigan get to 9 wins?
I think so. I think they are good enough personally to roll the ball out and be a 9-win football team. I think if they have enough juice at quarterback and enough juice at the skill positions, I think they could compete for a Big Ten championship. Now, I wouldn't pick them preseason, but Sherrone Moore and a lot of those guys that are back from last year, there's a lot of returning production that's missing, but guys that were on the roster, like the championship DNA in my mind, is very much so still there.
Especially on defense.
Their defense is
so
be
many
nasty.
Players
like,
on defense.
It's the same song. It's just a cover. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not going to be the exact same way that it looked last year, but a lot of those pieces, Colston Loveland, Mason Graham, Kenneth Grant, like Will Johnson,
Johnson.
So many dudes that are back from last year that can lead the way.
Can you be sneaky after you win a national championship? Can you be a team that's sneaky the next year after you just won a natty?
I don't think you typically can be, but the thing with Michigan that's kind of fit perfectly into their whole villain saga and their chance to go back-to-back is you got Oregon joining the conference, you got USC joining the conference, you got Ohio State making moves in the offseason.
So, and they host, like, Texas week two.
Yeah.
On top of all that.
Dude. I mean, it's like the volume around other teams is so loud to where Michigan should still have a lot of buzz around them, but we've just seen other things happen across the college football landscape. It's the perfect cover for, I think, Michigan to kind of just...
What about USC? Is USC screwed?
Oh, man. Screwed is a tough label for me to put on them right now. It feels tough. I don't think it'll be a smooth transition.
No.
I think it's so funny. Like, they have a new quarterback, and Caleb Williams has gone to the NFL, obviously Heisman Trophy winner, and, like, nobody's really talking about Miller Moss. We're all kind of just, like, Lincoln Riley quarterback. Yeah, he'll be okay.
Yeah.
And the defense with Danton Lynn is the real talking point, and for good reason. I'm curious. I think we're going to get a really good gauge how far the personnel gap is for USC on the line of scrimmage? Because I think there were times last year where you can chalk it up to like, hey, schematically, we just don't look competent. And so we don't even have a chance to see what we have personnel wise. We're not even matching up correctly. So we don't know how good we are defensively or how good we're not defensively because we're just out of position from the jump.
Well, we'll probably have you on our show at least 10 times before football kicks
Amazing.
Off. But quickly, Notre Dame going on the road, College Station, Texas A&M, who wins that game? You can change your mind in the other 10 times you come on.
No, I appreciate that caveat. Right now, I will say Notre Dame.
Wow.
I think they have more juice offensively than they've had before. I'm very, very close to leaning back to A&M because it's in College Station. I'll say Riley Leonard and the skill players they got through the portal are enough to kind of propel them as Mike Elko kind of gets things going.
How about Marcus Freeman going out and getting two of the top quarterbacks in the portal each of the last 2 years?
Yeah, I mean, the whole challenge everything. It's not just on the t-shirt now. Like, they're really going out and pushing the envelope for their roster. And I mean, the quarterback's going to get a ton of buzz, obviously, but like Chris Mitchell and Jaden Harrison have real deal speed that I don't think they've had in that wide receiver room for a while. Kind of some G5 guys that some college football fans are going to learn a lot about this year. Them and Jeremiah Love, the all everything running back for them. I say all everything in terms of how they use him. You can throw it to him, you can put him out in the slot. They're just so much more versatile and dynamic offensively. I think that's the difference from this team.
J.D. Pakel, thank you so much for joining us, man. We're really honored to be here. All right, we'll talk to you soon, brother.
Awesome.
One and only.
Set that mic right there. Thank you, man. What's the chat saying?
Let me get in here.
That was a lot of fun. Love these on three guys, man.
All right, let's go to...
Let's do it. Go ahead, hit the chat real quick. We're going to bring Rusty Manziel.
All right, we're going to get Rusty in here.
What's going on, Rusty?
Second.
How you doing, man?
Let's go to CJ. CJ, what's up, brother?
Take a seat.
CJ says, I don't trust Notre Dame or A&M. Rusty, what's your thoughts on that?
Welcome to the conversation.
Yeah, well, you just walk into the heater.
Notre Dame going to College Station this fall.
Boy, I tell you what, Notre Dame, that is they're at A&M this year?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Week 1.
Game 1. Walking into College Station.
I'm dealing, you know what I'm dealing with week 1? Georgia fans absolutely losing their damn mind playing Clemson at noon.
At noon. They're My pissed. Wife's losing her mind too. She works for Aflac.
They are pissed. Yeah. They
y'all
are
gonna,
pissed.
Y'all gonna roll them.
Pissed.
They want a night game, huh?
They want to look, get lathered up.
Yeah. Lathered up.
It should be a night game. What the hell are we doing?
Well, it's in Atlanta, Mercedes. So like 3:30, 4, SEC championships are a really good time because what happens there, you can get lathered up, go to the
cold
game,
sodas,
and go to a bar afterwards and catch the rest of the game tonight. Yeah. You know what I mean? At noon, you're like, what am I doing?
Yeah, I just woke up.
You can get a biscuit and a kickoff.
So it's never a biscuit and a kickoff. Man. I love it, man. Well, it's never too early to preview that matchup. What are your thoughts?
I think it's a big game for Dabo Swinney.
Yeah.
I think it's a big game for Dabo Swinney because I absolutely love the hire, Matt Luke. I think that was one Dabo. He had to make that. Because up front is where Clemson's been struggling. Mm-hmm. And you get into the squared circle with Georgia, you better be able to slugfest. You know what I mean? I think Georgia early on, they're gonna be very deep offensive line. They're massive. They're huge. Got a lot of experience coming back. Offensive line, boys, I'm telling you now, they are. That's some grown
Avengers
ass
movie.
Men. That's some grown ass men. You know, I mean? I hate to use all those words, freaks, and but those dudes are aliens.
Yeah,
like, when you see those, you're like, how does that happen? But I will say, I think Dabo understands because the hiring of Matt Luke to get him to come out of retirement is a great recruiter trying to build those trenches. And can they give Kublik time? Because last time when Georgia played Clemson, they manned them up and said, DJ's going to have to beat us. And he couldn't. You know what I mean? They manned the receivers up. Let's keep everything in the box, keep everything in front of us. So I think it's a good matchup for Georgia. I think it's like 12 and a half right now.
Yeah, I think it's 12 and a half, 13 and a half.
Last time
no love loss there. No love loss there now.
The Georgia, they came down 10-3 last time, right? 10-3. That was Georgia's national championship run.
That ain't happening again.
JT Daniels.
That ain't happening.
That was a week or two before Stetson took over, wasn't it?
2 weeks, I think, before Stetson.
Yeah.
You bring up the offensive line, but another thing we talk about Clemson all the time, the lack of skill positions have just fallen.
They used to have those dudes like they like every year they had two or three of those guys. I think Clemson fans agree. It hasn't been there in the last couple of years. So where are they gonna find that production? You know what I mean? I will say this. They got an absolute freak. It was here last year at the 0-3. Sammy Brown, one of the best athletes.
He's nice.
I've ever been around. First play of the game, Clemson spring game, gets a sack. He's going to play linebacker for them. So they got some young guys. Klubnik's going to be a big deal. Can he make plays, extend plays with his feet and those types of things? But, I mean, just being straight, people are going to – get me in the comments, but I really, really like this comment, this matchup for Georgia. I really like that early on.
How
with the experience, Carson Beck, you get that experienced quarterback in that first game.
I think Carson Beck will win the Heisman Trophy this year, man.
He's going to have the opportunity, and here's what I say. People ask me, I don't want to put that on him, but I will say this. He's going to play in big-time games. Mm-hmm. He's going to have big-time audiences, big-time environments at Texas, at Alabama, at Ole Miss, Tennessee at home. Kentucky's going to be a big game again, all these games. So he will have the right amount of opportunities to win one if he can produce there.
And I also think Cade Klubnik is going to benefit greatly for another offseason under Garrett Riley.
You get to see what he likes. And it's – people look at that and go, man, that's such coach speak, and it's not. A second year in an OC – because it's hard to change all the stuff during the year. You're just trying to win that week. You're trying to win that week.
Yeah.
You get to the offseason and go, okay, here's what we did. Here's what we did well. Let's build on that with him. A very smart kid coming from a big program out in Texas. So I do think he's going to have a better year, but I'm telling you, he's going to walk into a grown-ass man game at noon in Atlanta that day.
At noon. Well, no one is more in the know than you are when it comes to these recruits who are here this weekend. That's why you're with On3. And, again, we're so honored to be here at
Glad
this today.
Glad y'all are here, man. How cool is this?
It's unbelievable. It's incredible. Industry-leading stuff is what I'm saying.
Yep.
So can you just break down who's here this week? You know, do you have any projections for guys who are going to commit or guys who've just committed recently?
I'll say this. You know, I don't know if you guys saw David Sanders walk through here.
I saw him. How could you miss him?
You know, when you look at a kid that's 6'6", 285, I guarantee he's wearing a 34-inch pants. Like, this dude's built like an alien. You know what I mean? And I've done this long enough to know to look at him. If nothing changes, that's a Sunday. Never worry about a power bill type player. That's what I say. You know what I mean? Very good player. You look at Bryce Underwood, wide quarterback, at the number one player in the country.
We just talked to him.
Dude, like, you see him in person. Big, great arm.
Doesn't he just look like he fits LSU perfect?
Dude, his interview, I listened to him interview with Shea Dixon, LSU guy, and he goes, you had all this high, you know, you're highly rated, you do this. Why'd you just commit and shut it down? He goes, why not? He goes, when I was ready to make a decision, I just committed, I'm done.
That's what you want.
Dude, that's an alpha. You know what I mean? I'm not saying that the people are doing it wrong, but there's those rare kids that love football a hell of a lot more in recruiting, and you got to have one of those in your huddle. But you look at those guys, Julian Lewis is here, Juju Lewis, quarterback out of, you know, Atlanta, Carrollton, and you ask, he's committed to USC. Everybody's pushing. He takes all these visits, you know, talked to his dad for a little while today, and they are firmly committed right now to USC, but nobody's stopping. Auburn is in that thing. I'm telling you, Auburn's in that thing deep with him. Colorado, Deion Sanders is full press on him. So we'll see how those things – can you imagine Juju at Colorado? But I'm
convinced he committed to USC because they're the Trojans like Carrollton High.
Carrollton Trojans, man. Shout out Joey King, who coached – how about Joey King's career? I think he's lost 4 games in like 7 years.
It's pretty good.
Hey, and, oh, by the way, you coach Trevor Lawrence, and then you coach
pretty good.
Julian Lewis. You know what I mean?
Pretty good.
So not bad. But there's a lot of guys here. C.J. Wiley's here, kid out of Milton High School in Atlanta. I'm very familiar with him. Dad played at LSU. Mom ran track at LSU. That's going to be a big battle for everybody. Tennessee's there. Travis Smith Jr. It's just the list goes on and on and on. And I think last year, in my opinion, we were better up front. We had a bunch of big boys here.
Mm-hmm.
We got some we got some 6'1 corners. We got some skill players. We got some guys that can run. We got some QBs here. So it'd be interesting when you go back to look. We expanded the roster this year. It's around, 48, 47 players. My experience with this, you look at this, there's probably, I would say, I would be willing to bet, we'll go back and look 5 years, 31 to 32 of these kids will be NFL guys, barring any type of injuries or whatever. But the hit rate on these guys are a hell of a lot better than some down the line.
Yeah, I'm not surprised by that. I know we hit on Georgia already, but I'm coming back to it because I got to know. How do you replace a Brock Bowers and a Ladd McConkey? I know you can't. Is it a committee thing?
It's a committee thing.
Yeah.
But listen, I tell people all the time, you know, and I loved him as a person. I loved him as a player. And there's a reason why he went top 10, Roquan Smith. Roquan Smith was a bad dude. No. He was a heat-seeking, smart. He would absolutely light your ass up. Georgia's not going to place him. It doesn't mean they're not going to have really good linebackers. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean they're not going to have first-round linebackers. This is hard to replace a Roquan Smith. You look at Brock Bowers, the unicorn. He's a unicorn on the field. He's a unicorn off the field. Ladd McConkey, the story has been told many times. And I have to – every time I do an interview, Ladd, I'm sorry, I did not rank you higher. And we kid about it now.
Ah, get him, Ladd.
I tell you what. I went to see Ladd McConkey, some coaches told me, and I was like, I saw him. I was like, dude, I don't see it, man. I said, this is a good high school player. And this was right before his junior season. And I go, I just don't see it. And I was like, who is this kid right here? I kind of like this guy. I didn't really have enough to go on the table at that point. I was like, I really like this running back from Dalton, this kid named Jahmyr Gibbs. So I go see Ladd McConkey right here, and then there's this little skinny kid from Dalton. I was like, damn, that kid's he's got some burst to him.
Yeah.
And luckily, I was able to stand on the table a little bit. Yeah, I put my name on Jahmyr Gibbs on that one. But for Ladd McConkey and everything he's done, it's hard to replace those types. It's going to have to be committee. It's going to have to be committee. Yeah. It's going to have to be committee, and there's nothing wrong with it. Oscar Delp's there.
He's a dog.
The tight end from Stanford's there. Just moved in today. You know, so they've got guys.
Didn't we do a breakdown where Georgia has signed the number one or number two tight end in the country for 6 years running
or
something?
Probably. Todd Harley, man.
Which is the most unique. But it gives the defense the most trouble.
Yeah.
I mean.
So they can still run 12 personnel without Brock with no problem.
You know, it really started with, like, Darnell Washington, those guys, because Georgia was getting negative recruited, but saying that their tight ends are only blockers. They'll attach you to the you're just gonna block the defensive end. They're not gonna use you. They're gonna run the tailbacks, they're gonna play ball control, and they're gonna try to play defense. So when Darnell Washington and those guys came in and that class, it really elevated them. And then getting a kid like Brock Bowers out of that COVID year probably forever changed that room.
Yeah.
Now they've been negative recruited a little bit at wide receiver, saying they only throw the tight ends. And Georgia's comeback with that was, we had Brock Bowers. Hell yeah, we're going to throw to him. Yeah. But Brock Bowers is gone. Now we got some touches everybody's got to get involved with.
Yeah, bring AJ Green back for one visit to talk to him.
Has Georgia had the two biggest tight ends ever?
I'm going to tell you something.
Leonard Pope and Darnell Washington biggest people I've ever seen play tight end.
Was 6'7", 280, and he was running routes. Dude, think about
that'd be me putting on 50. That'd be me putting on 50 and losing a half second on my 40.
If Darnell Washington was running me, I'm making a business decision.
Can you imagine
so
being a 5-tech and seeing Darnell condense down, and you're staring at a first round tackle? You're trying to hold the edge, knowing this guy right here is about to crack back block. They're going to run that pin and pull on
you. It's a grown man sport, Rusty.
It's a nightmare.
And they're not playing. I mean, that DN's thinking, dude, I can't do this for four damn quarters.
No, I quit.
I'm this big ass dude laying on me, and I'm looking at, you know, Broderick Jones, who was a first round draft pick, in front of me.
Sucks.
You know what I mean? Like, and then that poor corner when that guard pulled.
Business decision.
I mean, it was receiving friends' funeral for him.
Yeah,
I mean,
look, hey, Coach, I'm just keeping contained.
Dude, he was done.
I'm just keeping contained.
Hey, before you talking about the Ole?
Yeah.
I'm not getting in front of that guard.
Before we take one from the chat, I got to ask you, would last year's Georgia team have beaten Michigan in the championship?
I really believe that, but I'll say this, that Georgia didn't do what they needed to do to get that opportunity. Mm-hmm. I think Georgia was a better matchup against Michigan. Head case, head wise, all that.
Alabama.
I do. I really do. And I think that, but you can't make that argument until you handle your business. Mm-hmm. I do think that Michigan got better, so much better as the year went on. And I don't think people put enough emphasis how good they were defensively.
That defensive line,
Michigan was as good as anybody in the country. And I'm an SEC guy. I'm telling you, that D line at 55. For Michigan is about to make some money.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to be a top five pick.
Oh, yeah. We get him again.
Dude, that's
a because we need him this year.
I went back one day. I don't know if you can go back and YouTube some of his highlights.
Yeah.
This dude will electrocute you when his hands. Like, when he hits you, you jolt neck, shoulder. Like, he will absolutely just control a gap.
And there was a while there in college football right before COVID where we thought, hey, this spread offense, a high-flying offense, is what's taking over. And we saw what Joe Burrow did, and Nick Saban goes and gets Lane Kiffin and Steve Sarkisian to be his OC, and things changed a bit. And then we watched Georgia win back-to-back national championships by playing hard-nosed defense and running the football like we used to see. And then Michigan following that template, which wasn't a copycat thing. Jim Harbaugh just had a quote that said, yeah, we view offensive linemen as weapons. We did get a weapon.
Yes.
So, you know, they at least did it the same way that these SEC schools and what Georgia's been doing these last couple of years.
I think the best thing happened to Michigan was that Orange Bowl. Get hit in the mouth by Georgia. Because everybody has a reality check. Like, if you want to get in the ring with that, that's how you got to play.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you have to play. And they came back. And it's hard. I really just personally feel like that was a better matchup, Georgia against Michigan last year. But I can't say – I can't go on the table and say they should have been out of the championship. They didn't handle their business. They didn't beat
Alabama. It's a team of destiny, man. Bring on all comers. After what that Michigan team went through, that's kind of how we kind of felt. Is this really – are we in a team of destiny situation here? Because it's just so unusual. I didn't think we'd win a national championship.
All that matters, dude. They got a ring, and they went undefeated.
Yeah.
And everybody has a – you know, Georgia beat Alabama. Alabama had some injuries in 21. I mean, that's still – Alabama, every time you post a national championship, the Alabama fans will – you know, there's – but – you can't take away a national championship.
Well, it benefits Michigan that they had to go through Alabama, because I thought Florida State, going undefeated, had a legitimate case to be in that Final Four. But if Michigan goes and beats Florida State in the semifinal and then beats Washington in the final, all we would have heard is, well, you won the championship the one year an SEC school didn't go. And that would have been kind of a legitimate criticism. Yeah. They match up against Alabama. They match up against Nick Saban, go toe-to-toe in overtime in the Rose Bowl, knock them out, and go on to win the championship. You went through the best to have to get you know?
Think if Georgia beats Bama, Florida State's in.
Yeah, we broke that whole situation down.
Florida State's in, man. I hate it because you want a team at their best in the playoffs, but they'd have been in. What that had done to all the playoff scenario? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So
yeah, Florida State. Look, they did. You're not a playoff team without Jordan Travis. You're not.
That's what that was the hardest thing for them to swallow.
And it sucks.
It sucks.
It hurts. Look, I get it. It's like going to Disney World and your favorite ride's closed.
Yeah, they were loaded too. But there's a reason why those trigger men get paid the most money.
Dude, I'm telling you, they might have had the best roster in college football.
I don't know why people were, like, thinking they weren't. Like, at least in a mention for two or three best. You know what I mean? Like, look at the draft.
I had some in-laws, family members on my wife's side who said, well, Florida State hadn't played anyone this year. I'm like, stick to the quarterback got injured strategy because, you know, what they did with LSU in the open, they opened and closed with SEC wins at the regular season, you know. But either way, anything from the chat?
Oh, yeah, Mac Attack wants to know, Rusty, what's the biggest threat on Georgia's schedule this year?
I mean, until they beat Alabama, they've got to kind of slay that dragon.
You're going to Tuscaloosa.
They go to Tuscaloosa, DeBoer's first game for first SEC game.
Come on, man.
It's that Texas game.
Are you going
to
be there?
I'm going to go to Alabama. I'm not going to Texas. I'm sending my guys there. I'm going to beat Alabama and Ole Miss. Texas is, I think, 2 weeks after Alabama. Yeah. Alabama's the end of September. But Georgia has to beat Alabama. That's been the one thing they beat them, you know, in the national championship. But, like, they've got to get over that kind of hump deal.
You know, who's not
it was the real same way with Georgia winning that championship. Yeah. They got to get over a hump to win one.
Sure.
But, you know, without Saban and DeBoer's first game in Tuscaloosa, that place is going to be
the Dark Emperor is gone now.
Going to be unhinged.
A little lighter on that sideline. You look Kirby looking over there. Oof.
Rusty Manziel, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much. We're honored to be here. Oh, man, we're holding it down. He's in Europe.
Yeah, he does all the cool stuff, man. We do the cool.
He's somewhere wearing a back-to-back World War Champ shirt in Europe.
He's somewhere with Zenzen right now in the middle of France.
He'll be back. He'll be back ready.
Yeah.
Or on a boat doing the Leo.
Look,
I guarantee you.
The Titanic.
If he does make that post, tag me in that.
We'll tag you in everything, brother. Thanks again, man. You're always a pleasure. Having me. Yes, sir. All right, what else we got in the chat?
All right, let me get
this. This is awesome.
All right, it's 3:25. We got 5 minutes.
Okay.
Let me get back in here. Everybody in the chat today, really appreciate all y'all in here.
Hey, Skyler, let us know if anyone else is coming through, all right? We're good?
All right, cool. Let me get to some donations while I'm here. And, guys, I can't go back and read certain donations just because I'm not logged in my iPad.
Sorry, y'all.
Once we get back,
we're out in the elements today.
Once we get back, we got you. We're going to go to a $5 donation from Ryan Gade. What's up, Ryan? How does school paying players affect smaller, non-blue blood Power 4 schools like West Virginia?
Say it one more time.
How does schools paying players affect smaller, non-blue blood power four schools like West Virginia?
It all comes back to the same conversation, which is how few teams are we going to go to for whatever the top iteration of college football ends up being. I don't know if we're calling that a Power 4 or if we end up calling it a Power 2 or if we just call it an amalgamation of Fox and ESPN because those are the TV rights holders. I don't know. In professional sports, it seems pretty clear to me. The number's about 30. 30 to 32 teams. Now, that's because they're representing the biggest urban markets across the country, right? New York, LA, Atlanta, Houston. Those cities get a professional team. That's the most number of teams we can have to where we can still have somewhat, you know, like parity across the league and then also have a legitimate champion be crowned and have them, the team that finishes last, pick first, that whole philosophy. Mm-hmm. College football has just been different. I mean, Nick Saban can go sign. That's why he said he came back to college football. I want to sign 10 first-round picks, not just get one
one first-round pick, of course that's going to affect parity. So I don't know what the number ends up becoming. I don't know if it's like, hey, the top 20 college football teams in the country are playing for this title, whatever it is, and the next ones are playing for this title, and the next ones are playing for this title. When I was growing up, it was Division I, Division I-AA, where I was from in Statesboro, and Georgia Southern would win the Division I-AA title.
Yeah.
They would never beat Georgia. Well, now we live in an era where, hey, I played on a Michigan team that lost to Appalachian State. These smaller schools are like what he's talking about with West Virginia. No, West Virginia might beat Penn State in the opener, right? Like that, no one would be surprised about that at all. So everyone's like, well, if we can beat these teams, then why shouldn't we be playing for whatever the ultimate league is, the ultimate tier? That's where I think the idea we came about, like how you would implement relegation, mm-hmm. so that teams who consistently do really, really good, look at what Tulane's been able to do season after season, then they get an opportunity to move up and play for whatever the top championship is. And then programs or schools who say, we don't value football enough or any athletics enough across the board to keep putting this type of money into it, well, then that would show on the field. You'd lose, and then you get relegated down. I think a system like that could work, but again, we're talking about seismic changes across an industry, multi-billion-dollar industry.
It's crazy right now. Quickly, $2 donation from Mr. Nashville. Everyone who donated earlier, thank you so much. I'll make sure to get to him when we get back. He said, guys, just found y'all, loving the content. I subscribed. Tell me, what games will y'all be going to this year?
I asked Rusty if he was going to be at Georgia going to Tuscaloosa, because I just think that we can't miss that game. I mean, you're talking about divisions being eliminated now in the SEC, and how are we not going to go to Tuscaloosa to watch them host
Georgia?
Do we
do a week one game?
What, live stream?
Do we go to a live?
We're going to be live streaming for sure.
That's right.
Yeah, y'all tell us what you want.
Yeah.
We're down for whatever.
Yeah.
Do we have any more ad reads, Trey, we have to read today?
I think we're done with ad reads.
Are we done with ad reads?
I believe so.
Okay. Just quickly, rapid fire here before we leave. I mean, the Mavs up 3-0 on the
Swept, Timberwolves. You're done.
I'm shocked. I'm absolutely shocked.
Am I shocked that it's 3-0? Yeah. Am I surprised that the Mavs are winning games? No, I'm not.
I'm shocked.
Because, like, you... At the end of the day, Rudy's the defensive player of the year. He's probably the most mediocre defensive player of the year. If you get him anywhere outside the paint, he's in trouble. You can't double Luka and Kyrie.
Sure.
You can't. Cat's not playing great.
Sure.
I mean, and clutch moments, in the clutches of moments, name the two guys out of everybody on that court, you would have the ball, the hands. I would have the ball in Kyrie and Luka's hands before I had an Anthony Edwards.
No teams come back from 3-0.
Nope.
This one's 3-0. How many games does it go? Or is this a sweep or something in between? Or can the T-Wolves be the first to do it?
I think the T-Wolves win this game. I think the T-Wolves win this game, but I do think the Mavs close it out after that.
Okay, a couple other things here. Celtics sweep the Pacers.
Not surprised.
Not too surprised by that. Angel Hernandez announced his retirement.
We did it.
The MLB umpire.
We won the war, everybody. We won the war.
You know, shout out to the family of Grayson Murray, the PGA player who took his own life at 30. Man. I wasn't familiar with him. We just hate to hear that news. And then Bill Walton passed away as well. You know, say what you will about Bill Walton, whether you agree with the things he said or not. It's hard to be one of a kind. In this
and he
life,
was.
He was one of a kind.
He was. Bill Walton was himself every day of his life, and there's respect to that.
Hey, Shannon Terry, thank you so much again for having us. Grant, everybody who came on today, Andy Staples, J.D. Bukel,
Cavender Manziel, Twins.
The Cavender Twins, we appreciate it. Bryce Underwood, if he flips his commitment, you best believe I'm going to have a heart-to-heart talk with him. Jake, shout out to you, man. Hope you and Reed are doing great wherever you are in Europe right now. Bring me back a souvenir. Why don't you sign us off today?
Just like the chance of Jake Crane not being a French spy, we're going gone.